Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
This episode of the IoT Spotlight is brought to you by the Industrial Internet Consortium. The Industrial Internet Consortium is the world's leading organization transforming business and society by accelerating the Industrial Internet of Things. IoT One has been a member of the Industrial Internet Consortium since 2015, and I've personally always been impressed by their ability to facilitate collaboration between hundreds of companies to bring new technologies to market and to jointly address topics like security and system architecture, which are fundamental to scaling industrial IoT adoption. Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight. I am joined today by Mitch Tsung. Mitch is managing member of Tsung InfoServe. He's also a distinguished consultant to Huawei at the IIC, the Industrial Internet Consortium. At the IIC, Mitch is the co-chair of the Innovation Task Group and also the co-chair of the Edge Computing Task Group. Mitch also has a deep background in some of the fundamental technologies behind the industrial internet. So he's involved with ISO, the International Organization for Standardization. He's a chair at the TIA Engineering Committee for Vehicle Telematics. Mitch is a perfect person to be speaking with today about how we are taking some of the fundamental technologies that have been developed in the past decade or so, and now putting them into very practical use cases that, let's say, traditional businesses that don't have deep IoT, IT departments can start to implement. Mitch, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for having me.
Mitch, you've got an interesting background. You also have a PhD, I should mention that. So you are very much a technologist. How did you end up, first setting up Tsung InfoServe and then representing Huawei at the IIC?
Right. Don't hold it against me because I have a PhD degree. Several years back, I was actually focused on the telecommunication for many years. My PhD is actually working on a digital signal processing. And then I got into the vocoder design and eventually got into wireless communications. And I have to say, I'm fortunate enough to ride on the tide of the growth of the wireless communications. And after working in the industry with those major players like Nortel Networks and Nokia, I found that world is changing, and then all the communication bases form a very good foundation for the future work. So after I left Nokia in 2009, I decided, okay, I'm looking for the next step. And I found a new love, which is machine-to-machine communications, M2M. And that's the time that people are talking about these small machines and the system on chips. And then eventually try to get into this, how do we use sensors and networks to help our industry and to boost our lives, our living quality. And then later on, of course, M2M became the IoT, right? Internet of Things. So I started looking into that part and try to leverage my background in the communications. And also, I'm also very interested in the business models because there was a time I was assigned to Beijing by Nokia, focusing on this smartphone platform marketing. So I've been trying to combine them together, and I found that IoT is not actually just something that the technical people should focus on, but also the success of this IoT business actually is a combination of technology plus business. So I formed this Tsung InfoServe as my consulting firm and start talking to people, start learning that, and eventually kind of pride myself as IoT evangelist for this part. Then, of course, in the process, I received attention from many organizations and also some companies. And eventually, I ended up getting a contract with Huawei Technologies. It's been 8 years now.
Interesting. Yeah. And Huawei is really one of the more interesting companies out in the market. I mean, they're getting involved in, certainly, I think a lot of people know them from their consumer business, but they are maybe the number one player, maybe number two in the enterprise market or the kind of the connectivity infrastructure. Are they now the number one player in the market globally?
Arguably, yes. I think the total sales in the infrastructure side, I think they surpass the others and become the number one in the world. Of course, their fundamental business is actually access, just the radio access and the wire access. Eventually, they branch into enterprise networks. And of course, when you talk about access, this is divided into two parts. One is the terminal side, which is handset, and the other one is a network. I've been working with the research wings terminal and also now working with the network side.
Yeah, so it's interesting. The test bed that we're going to be discussing today is manufacturing quality management. This is just a very operational side of a business. It's around identifying quality issues in manufacturing. So interesting that a connectivity company like Huawei would be taking the lead. What's the background story? Why did Huawei become interested in this topic and decide among all the potential topics that could be the focus of a testbed to focus on manufacturing quality management?
Eric, you know it well that in our industry, in this IoT or IIoT, it's actually a combination of the IT and the OT people. And Huawei, with a very strong presence and also built up a lot of experience by connecting the networks, by connecting the terminals, devices, actually pretty much just trying to support the whole communication community with the best access technologies. So yes, Huawei is very strong on the IT side. On the other hand, Huawei recognize that the communication business with the traditional telecom operators is actually continue to grow, but then the pace may be slowing down. And then they need to figure out what will be the best way to kind of revive their technologies for the future. And this, when the IoT become practical, and of course, one side is that to connect those, for example, like wearable devices. Those will be like a more like a commercial related access. But then they also recognize that there's a one territory that nobody in the IT community has been really fully addressed. That is in the operational technology domain, the OT domain. For example, a lot of factories, they have automations. But automations, they are using those controllers, and they also using those limiters to make sure that the process can be automatically produced. And of course, the objective for those factories is that to make sure that in the production line, the product can be produced without any glitches, and then the quality will be good, and also the quantity will be great, then so that they will meet their market needs. And in that case, they are very content with whatever they have today, because as long as the machine line, the production line is not breaking down, then you can expect the whole business is booming and the revenue is coming. But now with this IIoT, right, which is an IoT focus on the industrial domain, then we figured, we means that people from the IT domain figured there are so many things that we can help. For example, the sensors, right, the quality of sensors is getting better and better. And also the computing power and the memory chips, all the hardwares, the price of those hardwares are driving down through the years, and also the power of each chip, right? Either it's a computing power or the memory size, actually growing exponentially over the past few years. So we'll figure that, well, with the conventional, the PLC, the controllers, right, then we can probably do much better with our new innovative devices and the new technologies. Then, of course, there is something that, in the OT domain, as I say earlier, they are pretty contented with whatever they have today. So we need to figure out a way that we can actually knock on their doors and then introduce what we have over there, and to make sure that we bring in all the greatness, the goodness and greatness of the IT, and then to show that, yeah, we can actually, by working with by connecting both parties together, we can actually create a much better view for the future. From the production's viewpoint. And of course, about 3 years ago, there were some movements going on in the world. Actually, probably more than 3 years ago. This in Germany, there's Industry 4.0, and then in China, they have a corresponding movement started called Made in China 2025. So in that case, the both sides, they all based on, like I say, you join the IT and the OT together, and hopefully you can, number one, you produce a much better product in the future. Number two, you streamline the process, make it more efficient. Number three, you drive for fully automation. And there are maybe other benefits for that, but at least that these three will be something that the whole industry is looking on. And Huawei being the leader of this access technology in the telecommunication domain, they figure that they need to also get involved in that area. And that's how they get started. And then they join IIC.
It makes a lot of sense in the context of China's position in the world as a manufacturing hub, that this manufacturing quality management would be an intelligent place for Huawei to focus as they move more into the OT domain. So just for the listeners here, a couple of the other stakeholders in this testbed are Haier Group, which is one of the larger white goods manufacturers in the world, China Academy for Information and Communications Technology, and China Telecom. And one of the strategic priorities, as I understand, in China right now is to improve the quality of manufacturing. So obviously, China is very efficient on quantity and cost. Quality in some cases is already excellent. In other cases, there's still a lot of room for improvement. And so it makes sense to focus on that as an objective for Huawei and then the other stakeholders here. What I see as the goal on the testbed website is using the MQM, the Manufacturing Quality Management Analytics Engine, to drop the false detection rate by 95%. So let's get a little bit into the business case here. For Haier, I guess Haier is the end user here, so they're the ones who are providing their facility and reporting on the benefits as they realize. What's the business case behind this for Haier or for another manufacturer that might be using this solution in the future?
The original design for the MQM testbed is actually, we try to renovate older existing factories, or we should say, we should develop a very systematic way to renovate those existing manufacturing facilities in China, get them suited up so that they can fit into the future, like a modern production. And at that time, Huawei and the Haier has teamed up together. And that's mainly because Haier is actually focused on the appliance manufacturing. So they actually is a perfect partner choices for the OT. And at that time, we team up with Haier, and then because at that time we learned that Haier has some facilities in Shandong, China, and then they focus on this air conditioning manufacturing. The whole idea is that, okay, when we first got it, we say, okay, we heard that they have some problem with their welding section, because inside the key component of the air conditioning is this heat exchange tubes, right? The heat exchange tubes. It's actually rely on this welding process, so that makes sure that there's no leak when they join those tubes together. We heard that there are some issues with that production because some of the false detection rate, just like when I mean false detection means the machine actually is failed, but then somehow it passed the QC test and then got shipped out. And of course, when the product was shipped to the customer and the customer used it, in a short time, they decided they want to return it. And this caused a lot of hustle for the logistics. For example, like they need to bring it back to the store, and then they need to actually start the RMA process internally. And those are very costly. So they have been reporting there are some issues on that one. At that time, what we're thinking is that, okay, then can we do something to control the manufacturing quality to help hire on this part? That's the whole thing started. So we got our members, the CAICT and China Telecom, you just mentioned. We get them together, and then we try to discuss what we may be able to do to improve the process. And then as an engineer, we always think that, okay, we need to zoom in the problem right away. So immediately we zoom into this welding section. And we like to see, well, what we can do to improve that. And then when we first started, then we found that it's not that straightforward that we can do it. And then later on, we come back and then try to evaluate what we should do. And finally, we change the venue a little bit and just focus on the QC stations. And with that, we actually, in a short time, we actually turned the whole thing around. And we improved this the pass detection rate from 95% to 99%. Actually, we pretty much everything that's a pass will be passed. And then the one that the false detection rate originally was like 50%. It's pretty much like you flip a coin on that one. But we actually, we have a new method in place that we actually improved that by improved the success rate from 50% to 95%. And of course, Lee's actually greatly impressed the management. I think, Eric, if I can use a little bit more time, I can probably zoom into the changes. Why we are kind of, like I say, focus on the welding section and then eventually we'll turn into this the quality control station and how it changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as you're maybe walking through this, it'd be great to understand what are, we can go into this maybe detail afterwards, but what are the technologies that are involved here? So I guess one of the big challenges is how to cost efficiently integrate new technologies into a brownfield factory. And that's going to include, I suppose, in this case, some hardware, some software. So let's go into that. But yeah, please do first walk us through the evolution of this project from a focus initially on welding towards a broader focus.
At the very beginning, it's like we are all experienced engineers, so almost like a firefighters. When we see that, okay, there is something wrong with that welding session, then we immediately jump into that part. But the problem is, when we try to detect the welding section, because if when we talk about this IIoT, right? Normally we follow this IIC three-tier architecture, which is that you have this edge tier, which is contains a lot of sensors, that use your sensor and sensory networks. Then you gather those data and then you pass to the second tier, which is called a platform tier. The platform would do all the analytics, do the analyzing it, and make sure that you can come up with a meaningful analysis, then they can go back to help you fix the problem in the front. And of course, the third tier is a management tier. They actually will control oversees the whole process and make sure the process runs smoothly. As an engineer, then normally when the team reached a higher factory, they actually just try to zoom into this welding section right away. And then we found that there's a potential problem there because the welding section is actually a very, quote unquote, very dirty environment from electronic signals viewpoint. Because you have all those arcs coming out, you have those high arc, the high voltage arcs running around. And worst of all, the machine, the robots has been there for some time. So after a few trials, we recognize that it's almost impossible. It is almost impossible for us to stick a new sensor by in the retrofitting process. So we've been bugged by this for some time, and then eventually we came to IIC, and then there are some partners, some members actually came in to help. For example, they have this company called Fujifilm, and then Olympus. They both have divisions handling this welding factories. And then we actually consulted with them and then found out that most of the welding process, the people, they don't do a real-time check. What they do is that they do the post-analysis. For example, like Fujifilm, they have this X-ray. They have this X-ray film-based system. They can actually take a picture of, for example, this the mobile phones. Right? After you weld it, they can take a picture of that. And if there's any crack, they can actually see it from the optical's viewpoint. And then Olympus, there's the technology is actually most based on ultrasound. They will run the whole material through with the ultrasound sensors. And also on the source, then based on the response, they can detect a crack. That means a crack in the welding means a failure over there, right? So we found that, all right, there's no real-time process we can do, and then, so what can we do to help this process? So that's why we kind of fall back a little bit and sit back a little bit and then say, all right, let's reevaluate the whole thing, because remember, we are focusing on the quality control system, not just one station. So maybe at that time, we kind of jump into this welding session too early. And then when, on your second visit of the higher factory, we recognize that the way that the quality control was made at that time was that actually at the end of the production line, they actually installed three experienced listeners, right? They turn on the machine and then get the listener to listen to the noise of the machine. Then, of course, you can hear that. It's actually kind of, the method is kind of like a simple. But then, of course, the whole success rate is rely on how experienced those listeners are. then of course you can tell that people have good days and bad days. So maybe in some good days, everything will be fine. And the bad day, then some of these faulty products because slipped into the shipping line. So we come back to the lab and then redesign the whole thing. And then finally we say, okay, can we focus on this analytical engine part just in the platform side? Can we get something that we can use to help this acoustic noise detection process? And of course, I actually had some expertise on the voice before. So I know that, okay, there's something that we can do. That is, we can have some kind of, just like with some training data, that we can have some machine, we can train it so that they can do it online automatically. And fortunately, at that time, Huawei, they have this artificial intelligence engine, the AI engine. Originally, it was designed for other projects, but we were fortunate enough to borrow it. And then by asking Haier to provide a lot of test data, then we actually can train the AI engine. Yeah, we use it as a deep learning or machine learning. That's all the hot words, the hot buzzwords that people are talking about it, but actually put it to work. And pretty soon then we found that the machine actually picked up the detection process in a reasonable fashion in lab. Then one of the challenges that we don't have too much of this false data. That means because the production actually is in a pretty good shape, like a 90%, 95% of the success rate. So they don't have a whole lot of failure that happens. But we managed to ask Haier to provide those data. And eventually, the first time we went to the field test, the machine actually is at least maintained a par with the human listener. Then we came back again to analyze why there is a still cannot do better than human. And then, of course, we immediately recognized that when we're listening to the whole thing, we also pick up a lot of this ambient noise. It just take a couple of days and we build this noise-proof chamber. It's not an anechoic chamber, but it's actually a chamber with padding inside. It can greatly reduce ambient noise. And then we put the microphone inside and then listen to the machine and then pump the data to this AI engine. Even the first trial, just like I said, we reached almost 100% accuracy. So that's actually very, very impressive at that time. The best part is that the higher management, they originally kind of skeptical about what we're doing because a lot of people have been talking to them about this IoT stuff, but they never have a good feeling about how this stuff can help them. What we did is that we just used this IRA architecture, just to have sensor platform and management and try to map what they have in the production line. So the first step is that we gain the management from the production line, kind of agree with us so that we can actually operate on that one. And then eventually when we showed them the great result, they are fully convinced. And actually one side note on this one is that originally the test bed, we only planned to have one production line on the air conditioning, but just because the success rate is so great, the management actually approved the second line on the kitchen vent.
That's a great point that you made at the end of this kind of process brief. I was in a conversation yesterday with a partner, and you know, she mentioned that she's working with a lot of Chinese manufacturers, and I think this is true outside of China the world over, who say, you know, they want to know which technology they can use to improve their facilities, and they want somebody to kind of tell them, install these or purchase these set of hardware and software, and you'll become more profitable and so forth. You'll become, you know, quote unquote, an industry 4.0 ready facility. And that's just not how it works. So I think the process that you just outlined here, very much a learning process where your initial hypotheses didn't really pan out because you found out that the operating environment was too noisy. There was, it was too uncontrolled in order to install new sensors and to, you know, kind of accurately collect data and have a result there. And then you tried to deploy the analytics engine or the algorithm in the existing situation that the human is operating in, and found out, you know, likewise that there's too much ambient noise for this to be an efficient solution. And so it was this iterative process where you change scope somewhat, and you had to properly understand the problem and then develop the solution around that. And I think that's just where we are. So it needs to be kind of a learning process, discovery of, you know, where in the process can we actually use technology to create a result, And then which technology suite might that be? And it might be a completely different set of technologies or a completely different approach than we initially envisioned. Where are you in the test bed today? So I think it sounds like you've had a great success. Hire is open to kind of expanding the scope. Is this now a solution where you say it's more or less ready to bring to market, or are you working with Hire or other partners to deploy it in different environments and continue to refine the, let's say, the approach of modifying, retrofitting a brownfield environment and then deploying, you know, this solution? Is it already kind of a standardized enough that you feel it's commercial ready?
The process right now actually is to a point that I will be trying to wrap up all the findings, all the lesson we learned through this process, and then try to publish the final report in the MQM testbed, MQM testbed in IIC. And that will be as a starting point, kind of like a draw a closure on the phase one, on this one. And meanwhile, we are seeking through IIC and the members, see if anybody else is interested in reapplying these methodologies to their process. And actually, I have to say one great thing that we learned from the whole thing is that we actually kind of exposed one of the problems or the great mystery, why IoT, people has been talking about IoT for many years, and why the deployment has always been kind of slowed down. And you can see on the network, on the internet, there are a lot of hypes talking about the new devices, the new solutions. Then one of the fundamental questions that people try to address is that, right, and why this IoT is not taking off as people predicted. And of course, there are some success deployment in the future in the several fields. But in the process, when we do the review session, we found that maybe because we are trying to, say, understand the problem and work with the client first, then we're looking for solutions. And that may be the one that leads us to a better result at the end. Because we have observed that there are so many companies and then entities, they produce a lot of wonderful products. But normally, it's a group of engineers, right? They sit in their labs and then work real hard and come up with something that they consider as the best product. But in our process, we found that, yeah, the product may be great, but the product actually may not fit our clients' needs, because our clients, they have specific needs, right? And then most often that you'll find the salespersons, they bring their product and then they talk to the potential clients. Then no matter how great the product is, when the client asks, how soon can I get it? And you'll find that most often that this product is not ready. And unfortunately, the need from the client side is always now or even yesterday, right? So with that process, then you can see that this kind of mismatch, to me, is probably one thing that maybe triggered or maybe resulting like the uptake of those IoT products. The slow uptake of these IoT products. Then in this process, we learned that we can do well, we can do better than by listening to the client first, and then we define the problem, and then we're not afraid of refining the process to make sure that we achieve what the client really wants. And the most important finding out of the whole thing, actually I documented in my report, is that we actually listen to the clients and then we produce a tangible values, immediate tangible values for the client. And that's how we become successful. And of course, right now we are using the IIC as a platform, and we try to encourage there are more members. And then if there are some people who are interested in reviewing the whole process, and then they're willing to actually discuss with us, then we are certainly welcome to that. And because right now the Huawei is not really making business, right? It's not making business on this side yet, because IoT is definitely is a focus. But right now, there's no entity talking about MQM manufacturing or whatever right away. So if you want to get this, if you want to get involved in this, or maybe have a feeling about this MQM testbed, I think the best bet is still go through the IIC channel.
Yeah, if I can just kind of reiterate or synthesize that, I would say if you're industrial IoT technology company, especially a younger company, emphasis needs to be placed from the beginning on building partnerships, right? And that's one of the things that the IIC enables through the testbed program. But typically, these companies have a great product that fits into a much larger solution that is going to require a lot of customization. And that means that, you know, they need to figure out, how does my product fit into this solution or this range of solutions? And how does the solution have to be customized? And typically, the technology company, as you said, there's some engineers sitting somewhere in the world, maybe in a place like Silicon Valley, where they're very disconnected from actual manufacturers, and figuring out how they're going to get to market and how they're going to make their, you know, put their niche technology or their specific technology into the right system and configure that system for the needs of real client. It's not going to be something that most companies are capable of doing by themselves. Certainly the Siemenses and the GEs can, you know, potentially do that, although I think they also are seeing more value in partners. But for most companies, they're going to need to get some system integrators involved. They're going to need to get some other companies that maybe sensor manufacturers and so forth that have really unique vertical expertise, a lot of understanding of specific problems, and collaborate with them on getting that product out to market. I think companies are starting to take more of this ecosystem approach, but it's just necessary, right? Because even a large company like Huawei, end of the day, it's providing one set of technologies into a much broader system. And they don't have the vertical expertise. So they certainly need to collaborate together. I think that's a big strength of the IIC's testbed program. Mitch, let's turn to more of a deep dive on the technology. So when I'm reading through the the MQM brief here, I see it broken down into, so the cognitive computing platform that Huawei has developed, into data acquisition, data preparation, cognitive analysis, and then testing. What were the sets of technologies that were developed during this process? What are the technologies that were kind of already off the shelf, either at Huawei or at partners, that you integrated? Can you give us a kind of breakdown what the actual technology suite looks like? And then what was needed to develop specifically for this solution? And which technologies did you use that were readily available on the market?
Those are softwares. Actually, some of them actually is the off-the-shelf products that actually Huawei adopted. Then, of course, like Huawei, we also have we call it Shannon Lab. It's a corporate level research labs. They actually have AI teams over there, and then they focus on all the new software in the field. And I have to say, I don't know much about the details on that part. But then the good thing is that they provide us support to get those softwares involved. Then, of course, the machine learning engine and also the deep learning engine, those actually require some development internally. And that's all I can say about it. Then if you are thinking about more details about that, I can actually hook you up with the designers over there.
What about the engagement of China Telecom? So I see they're one of the member participants. I mean, certainly connectivity solutions or connectivity is required here. Was it more or less a standard standard connectivity solution that they provided, or did they also have some strategic or kind of R&D support in this testbed?
In our original design, the China Telecom will be the provider for if we want to do the remote connectivities for the testbed. For example, the engine right now, the AI engine right now is actually in Hyres factory, right? That's a phase one. Then what we want to do is that in the phase two and phase three, what we can do is that number one, we beef up this network in the factory. So we provide a better connectivities so that make sure that all the data can be connected, not just in this quality management session. Then eventually in our original proposal, we will have this center in Beijing, either in CAICT or in Huawei. They can have a mirror system set up over there. Whatever fact happens in the factory, then they will have a copy on site. So that means if there is something wrong with the analytic engine, they can actually do the reconfiguration or software upload through the network. And that would be Huawei's lab and work with CICT, and also the China Telecom will provide all the necessary connections.
Interesting. And then you, as you continue to identify the right solution for this problem. Was it the case that that was just not necessary for the solution that you developed, or is that kind of a hypothetical next stage? Sounds almost like kind of a digital twin type solution, if I'm capturing the concept right.
But then the thing is that we have the original proposal that we try to finish this phase one project in 2 years, right? And then at that time, the main focus is actually we want to go to the field to understand the customer's need and to come up with a solution, a workable solution, and provide a tangible result. The decision at that point is that the AI engine, we should originally we think about maybe just put a network on that, but then in the initial phase, turned out that this work may be too cumbersome. So what we're actually doing is that we actually shift the whole code computer to the production line. And then right now, yeah, a lot of people may think this is overkill. If you just want to do this acoustic detection with so many computing powers in it. But for us, this is actually more than just a proof of concept, because we also use this to demonstrate to the OT partners. So what do we mean by this analytic engine? Right, so that when they see something like that in the vicinity, in the premise, and they can see it, they can feel it, and they can see how it works, this is actually really helpful as well. Then, of course, that the other part, like a digital twin, whatever, that's actually in the plan.
Clear. I suppose what you've solved so far is you've solved one specific problem domain, and then this digital twin concept could potentially monitor the entire factory, where there might be 100 kind of similar deployments that would be monitored at different stages in the process and could be adjusted and optimized over time from a rope. And then, of course, a company like Haier has dozens, if not hundreds, of factories around China. So I could see the value, especially for a larger organization, to have kind of a central control center where they're able to monitor the different production lines and different stages on those production lines remotely. That's certainly, I think, much more cost effective than having kind of troubleshooting teams in every facility, because there's just so much talent to go around, right? I think talent is very competitive.
Exactly. Actually, what we heard that from our partners is that the higher management was so impressed with this project. They actually formed an internal team and just try to focus on how do they retrofit all their different production lines on this part. So they may not actually jump into digital twin right away, but then I think they're on the way to there.
Mitch, what do you think is the next step for you? Are you going to be taking this through to a next stage, or do you see potentially another test bed that might be on the horizon for Huawei?
Well, actually, Huawei has multiple test beds that is actually in the queue right now. To name a few, we have this test bed that focuses on the digital metro. That's the metro line subway system. Right, they are actually they're in the review process right now, and also there's another one proposed that they use this elevator. Right, they want to connect all the elevators to form these elevator networks. Right, then you can do a lot of interesting things when you connect all the elevators together, ranging from surveillance, all the analysis that you can have. Advertisement is one of the major applications on that, and you can do so many things on that, like a predictive maintenance, for example. You can make sure that the maintenance team, they only do the maintenance on the elevator when it's needed. And that, of course, will improve the efficiency on that part. Then there are several other test beds actually cooking internally that I'm not able to say. But Huawei, I think that there are a lot of people inside. They are seeing this test bed as a good way to showcase what they have and also to join with partners for the future. And then they can actually turn this connected world much better with the Huawei Access technologies. So yes, we are working on that. And personally, I'll probably be number one, just try to continue to be the spokesperson for the MQM. And then also, if there are some interest in this part, then I can certainly try to connect them with interested parties. Then also I'll probably be the lead for some of the test beds in the future as well.
Mitch, just as a closing thought, based on your experience with MQM, what advice would you give to companies that are either an IIC member and that haven't gotten involved in test beds, or maybe not an IIC member, but a company that's trying to figure out how to do cost-effective development of industrial IoT solutions, you know, whether it's joining the ISE or just figuring out how to run programs with multiple other stakeholders, with multiple partners. I think that's something that a lot of companies just haven't had much experience with in the past. It's either been internal or it's been bilateral, but this this model of having multiple stakeholders is fairly fairly unique, not particularly easy, but very impactful when successful. So what advice would you give to companies that are exploring this concept in order to help them maybe take the first steps and minimize the risk of failure?
This is actually $1 million question, Eric. I've been working on this the M2M IoT domain since 2009-2010 era. It never surprised me that so many people are interested in it. And then every day when I look on the world, there are new products pop up, and then there are some companies, some people think that they can turn rich overnight just because they have a new product. But the truth is, after so many years, I finally realized that when we talk about this IoT or IIoT, it's actually an end-to-end business. You cannot just say, okay, I've become part of that and I've become very successful. That means when you try to think about what you want to do over there, for example, when you build a device, rather than just how powerful this device is, you need to picture that how this piece of device will be fit into the much bigger system picture, right? When you have a sensor, then you need to know how much information you can get and how much power you consume and how secure it is, because all the characteristics will affect the end-to-end service. That's actually the thing that we talk about IoT. We actually talk about IoT service, right? If you're just thinking about IoT without thinking about IoT service, you're going to run into trouble in the future. When we try to talk about this end-to-end, one easy way to do that, actually, I learned this concept through the IIC testbed. What IIC testbed is that you try to test a service-based, or maybe you test a technology, or you try to test some new sensors. Everything can be done like that. But the problem that you try to solve is that you want to make sure that you have this end-to-end service built up. And then, because without an end-to-end service, you don't provide a value to your customer, to your clients. And IIC testbed to me is that they say you need to plan from the sensor side, which is like we call the edge tier. And then when you go to the analytic part, which is the engine, they need to process those data you collected. And then, of course, on the management side, you want to make sure that how you convey these messages to your customer, to your client, and also to your end users on this part. So it's actually it's an end-to-end process, right? And now we have more than 28 test beds in the IIC. I can tell you that every single one of them is almost like I say, just slap the business model on the top of that. It'll be something you can try and run immediately. We have some test beds actually deployed in China. They are talking about this water monitoring. The thing is that they actually work with the water systems in some counties in China, right? Just like I say, you have on one end, you have this reservoir. They will monitor how much water they pump. And then you have this transmission line in between. And at the end, you have end users. How you go into this each household, or you go to the water tank. And of course, in the process, you monitor all the flows. So you know that when the consumption is much less than pumping, then that means there's a leak in between. And how you do that, how you diagnose it, and how you can test it, right? It started as a test bed, but eventually it turned into a business model for some companies. Actually, a successful business, not just a business model. And all the test beds are working from that angle. So for those people who want to be an instant millionaire or who want to get rich fast, I would really suggest that, say, number one, when you talk about this IoT domain, you always need to think about end-to-end perspective and then try to decide which part you fit in this end-to-end process. And of course, when you know that you are just part of that, you know that you need to team up with somebody. And how do you identify the supporting partners or the partner you can work with? There are a couple of ways that we can do that. The number one is that, of course, you kind of just join the associations, affiliations, and then maybe I know, like right now, actually, Eric, as your agency is doing a great service on IoT stuff as well. And then we can actually just connect the people. Then like in the IIC, we have members, we have we call the IIC Connect in every meeting. That's like I say, you are a member, you are welcome to join. If you are a non-member, you are still welcome to join. All you need to do is just register. And then say you have some time slot, then you can have a one-on-one meeting with other IIC members. Then you can jointly exploit what you can do. And I think what we want to do is that say we want to make sure that the IIC, the IoT can be, the business can be proliferated soon. Because I do believe, like I said, the volume actually matters. When we have more and more people engaging in the IoT, when we have more and more deployment in the IoT, everything will be better. Everything will be lower with a lower cost. And this actually will create a positive cycle for the whole business. So yeah, if I can be any help, you're welcome to reach me. And then, or if you want to contact IIC, I can help on that part as well. And actually, Eric, maybe you can post some links about the IIC in this webcast, and we can work from there.
Perfect. Well, I'll certainly post the links to the testbed, also how to get in touch with the IIC. Mitch, what would be the best way if somebody did want to get in contact with you? Do you prefer through LinkedIn or email, or what would be the best way for people to reach out to you?
I do have a LinkedIn account, and then the email is probably the best way to reach me because I'm all over the places. I think email is most reliable to reach me. Mitch at the t-infoserve.com. That's my email address.
All right. We'll put it there. Mitch, thanks so much for taking the time to talk through us the testbed today.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you, Eric.
This episode of the IoT Spotlight was brought to you by the Industrial Internet Consortium. To learn more about their joint testbeds, white papers, and other collaborative activities, visit www.iiconsortium.org or reach out to me directly and I'll be happy to make an introduction.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. If you have unique insight or a project deployment story to share, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. Write us at eric.walenza@iot1.com.